Ready to go in 5, 4, 3.
Okay, so is it on after one or is it on one?
Now broadcasting the webcomic Beacon.
It was like minus three ago now. Okay.
But if you're going to say go, is it going to be like on the one or is it going to be after the one?
No, I'm not going to say go. I was doing the thing where I like wave my fingers at the computer, but I don't say the last couple of, which you can't actually see.
Well,
so
that doesn't help.
I'm a TV producer. I did radio like 15 years ago, and then I moved into TV, and then I got fired, and now I have a webcomic. Shut up.
You need to dumb it down for us.
Yeah, I'm going with Taka. We're going to fix it in post. All right. Quiet.
You're dealing with the visually impaired. We talked about that on the newscast.
All right. Will you stop that? Okay, seriously, folks. Hey, everybody. This is Adam Smithy of the Apple of Discord. Welcome to Webcomic Beacon, episode 191. Now, today is a little bit of a different sort of episode because this is technically actually the core program, not the Tropecast. But I'm in charge because Fess and practically everyone else involved with the Webcomic Beacon suspiciously disappeared yesterday during that whole fake rapture thing. So, joining us today, we've got a couple of special guests who are going to help talk about the topic du jour, which we'll introduce in just a minute. Mike, why don't you go first?
Hi, this is Mike from OnyxSparrow.com and Wagon Webcomic Battle.
Well, hey, Mike.
And Liz, since you're the other semi-official co-host.
Semi-official. This is Liz Staley of Adrastus.comicdish.com, soon to be AdrastusComic.com as soon as we move the site.
Oh.
And joining us today, we have an extra special guest, a person who has a fair amount of experience in and around the world of webcomics and podcasts. Mr. Guest, sign in, please.
I feel so special. Hi, I'm Phil Hofer, Frumpf. Nice to meet you.
We also may or may not possibly be joined by Tanya as the podcast progresses. Tanya appears to be having the typical Tanya level of technical difficulty.
She's underwater.
It's not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. I'm never on the same podcast is Tanya. It just doesn't happen.
She's just underwater right now.
I suppose that's a possibility for her. So let's see. Today's topic, we're going to try something a little bit different. Now, today's topic started out from a very strange point. When we realized that Fess wasn't going to be here today and I was going to run the beacon, I said that since this is essentially a crossover, because I'm starring on the beacon, well, with you guys, that we should do crossovers. This should be about crossovers. And Fess, of course, like, started freaking out because he loves crossovers. Yes. And I said, well, that's fine, because in a couple of months when I can't be there for the Tropecast, you can be in charge of the Tropecast and do crossover tropes. So look for that in the not-too-distant future, provided that he doesn't find a way to weasel out of it. But anyway, so the challenge is, the Beacon has done several crossover episodes in the past, but I got to looking, and they haven't really done any of them since the first year. But I listened to all of those old podcasts, and oh my god, Tiny Baby Fess was so cute sounding, because really, it's, he's, you know, seriously built the pipes up in the last couple of years. Going back to year one was just like, oh. Anyway, So I listened to them, and I listened to the things that they were about, and most of them tended to be about people who were actively doing crossovers at the time. They had the guys from Crossover Lords on there. They had the guys who were doing the Crossover Wars. They had the guys that run the Dragoneers crossover, like, archive that tracks all of the different crossovers. But they didn't really talk about the why of crossovers. So that got me to thinking about whys in general. And being that I've been boning up on some other radio shows to get more tips to absorb, which by absorb I mean steal.
He said boning up.
Yes, yes, thank you very much.
Don't make me turn this podcast around.
We may or may not be joined by Tanya. It looks like, nope, we lost her again. Where was
I? Hung up after hearing the boning up part.
Oh, yes, boning up. Now, I've been listening to a bunch of other podcasts and radio shows trying to get ideas that I could steal without being too obvious. And one of them that I ran across that I really liked was the Freakonomics guys that wrote the book and then the blog and then did a movie have a Freakonomics podcast / radio show that they've been doing. And it was it's a really neat approach, everything that they do, and so I decided that we were going to try a different sort of discussion today, where instead of dragging on people who are actively doing whatever it is we're gonna talk about, we're going to talk about why people make decisions like crossovers, and we got a couple of other topics depending upon exactly how long the crossover and cameo discussion lasts, but we're going to come at this from a kind of a almost economic, like social sciences sort of approach to try and get inside the head and understand why the things that people do with webcomics are the things that people do, like why they automatically jump to some of the things that they do, and what we can do to make that better or worse, or, you know, get in closer and better with it.
Yes.
So, I know, let's see, where should we start here? Do we have Tanya? Are you there?
We do. I do.
Oh my God.
I am.
Oh my God, hi.
Hi.
Wow, that means we've got two legitimate people from the Beacon crew on here now, so that makes this officially a podcast now.
And a crossover.
Yes.
Wait, does that mean our takeover failed?
No, we're still for the most part.
Quick, I'll distract her.
I'm not defending anything, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
Come on in.
Yeah. So we can get her over to our side.
It's Sunday morning, I'm pretty suggestible, so yeah, go for it.
Oh boy. Well, hi.
I'm just gonna
morning. Okay.
I'm just gonna take a note of that for later, okay.
And Sunday morning Tanya is suggestible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to start out.
Ratings just went up.
We're going to start out talking about crossovers and cameos, and by virtue of extension of inter-author and artist cooperation, also like guest comics. Now, these are rampant in web comics, but I'm curious. Let's start with Mike. Why do you think that people like to do these as much as they do?
Well, I think first off, most of the people get their first cameos they ever pull is because I love that character from that other webcomic and I want that character in my webcomic. So they do it as kind of a fan service. I have something and I want you to be part of my thing, so they're creating a connection between them.
All right, anybody else got a...
Well, I actually have something to say about this. Cameos and you know, crossovers pretty much used to be determined by, you know, sharing hits between one site and the other. You know, they would basically say, you know, we should do this so that we can get some readers from this site to that site. That was the general thinking. Of course, the reality of it is that, you know, these guys meet at a con and go, hey, you know what would be cool? You know, and a couple beers later, oh, yeah, that's funny as hell. You know, that's pretty much how...
Yeah. I think that's when we get into the difference between the cameo and the crossover. Because when you get into just a cameo, I think it's a lot of times, hey, I'm going to have something appear in my comic because I think it'll be awesome. When you get a true crossover, that's when you have a mutual connection between two artists. So it's more of a peer connection opposed to a, you know, step up the ladder connection.
Now, when you say cameo, are you talking about approved cameo, or are you talking about just sort of grabbing a character from another comic and sticking it in your comic without the author's knowledge?
I think for the benefits of this, we should mostly focus on the approved cameo.
Because people who aren't being a dick?
Yeah, people who aren't being dicks and are actually are trying to be nice and play well with other webcomic creators.
It's the differences between whether or not that appearance in that comic is canon or not. Okay.
Which is one of the great reasons we're having this discussion without Fess, because now we don't have to listen to him scream about canon for 5 minutes.
Yes. So no drinking.
Yeah.
At least on that point.
Yeah. We might actually not send any of you to the emergency room with alcohol poisoning this morning.
Oh boy.
So let's throw out a couple of quick definitions here. The cameo is where one character appears insignificantly, or elements from one comic appear insignificantly in another. You know, like on the Apple of Discord on Friday, I had just like on the TV that was in the background, it was part of the gag, but I had pictures from Insanity of Zaid and from Gilbert and Grimm, just as like these were hypothetical things that my characters were watching on the TV set. They weren't really interacting with it. The crossover is the bigger deal. That's where usually you have two or more webcomics that are cool, that are either full out trading characters back and forth, or cooperating on a joint storyline that impacts the both of them simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, guest comic is where you are late for an update and I am not doing anything and I draw you a comic.
Yeah. Or plan, you know, and there's also the planned guest comic thing. You know you're going to be on vacation, so you get a bunch of people to do comics ahead of time to kind of fill in what you're not going to be able to.
You mean plan something involving a webcomic in advance?
I know, it's crazy talk. I have done it.
I do it all the time. I'm actually looking for guest art right now because of the hiatus coming up between chapters. Not so crazy.
Don't say the H word. It's bad.
I'm sorry, I did it again.
So,
I'm bad at this game.
So, looking at this from a, would you say for the most part, crossovers and cameos are mutually beneficial to both of the people involved?
In fantasy or in reality?
In reality.
No. I don't know.
No.
If you're a big comic, you know, the recent crossover between Something Positive and Girls with Slingshots with the Cats, they already had each other's readers, so it was wildly popular. A lot of the other crossovers I've seen, people are either confused or they didn't read the other comic, so they don't know who the character is. They gloss right over that little bit and then get back to what they were reading originally.
Well, a proper crossover, you know, explains who the characters are in a way that the readers from individual comics can understand who they are.
Mm-hmm. But knowing who they are and being emotionally invested in that character are two very different things.
Well, you can consider them tertiary at that point in time.
Yeah. Which, again, if it's a tertiary character, why would I go to the other comic to learn more? I don't care. I don't think it works. You might get a couple of readers out of it. You know, that's always possible. And I actually think that I pulled more readers from various guest comics and things from the comments that the creator made in the blog about me than I did for, you know, whatever was actually in the comic.
Now, what do you think about the compatibility levels of comics? Because I think that that's one of the... There's like some comics are universal donors. Like they have characters that can by nature of the universe set up in the comic, go anywhere or do anything. And then some comics, my Apple of Discord, for instance, are universal receivers where practically anything could show up in the Apple of Discord and it would be part and parcel for any average update of the Apple of Discord. How important is it that you find a comic that's of the same type so that it's not going to cause, like, a huge amount of, like, viewer rejection as just, you know, like, not being...
Yeah, like a blood type thing? You don't
Kind of.
That's the donor organ?
Yeah, I figure that it's easier for, like, sci-fi comics to cross over to similar genred sci-fi, or as long as they can couch it within the narrative of the sci-fi, you know, yeah, dimensional...
There usually has to be some kind of connection between the two. The same kind of universe. There has to be a reason why they're interacting. For you to take, like, a character from just Agatha from Girl Genius and then throw her into the middle of the Apple of Discord fighting Gayzilla would work. Take her and throw her into, like, PSI. It wouldn't work.
No.
It's just not going
to
happen.
Well, first of all, Fess would need to rewrite the entire continuity of PSI to accommodate her one appearance.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Again.
Yeah. And obviously, you can't take something with very fantastical elements and slap it in the middle of a slice of life comic.
No.
Yeah, slice of life comics are really hard, I would imagine, to effectively cross over unless you encounter other slice of life comics. Like, if you were still doing Beta Pwned and you and Alex hung out at the convention, then Alex could easily show up in Beta Pwned and you could easily show up in her guide, and it would be totally
That's
within.
That's a total mesh.
Yeah. Because it's based on reality, which is...
Yeah. Which occurs, as it turns out. Reality happens. And so there's things to write about. I did like a Jenny Everywhere deal. I don't know. I guess you'd consider that a cameo. There wasn't really any plot. It was a two-story, two strips. And she existed only as a joke about me being, like, girl happy. She had no character, no anything. She came in, knocked over a bookcase, and got ogled, and that was it. There's a way to do it, but it's not really... You know, it certainly couldn't be considered a storyline.
It all depends on how you present the characters. I mean, if you bring in a character as, hey, I'm on the same level as you, we can actually talk and interact and do things, that's one thing. You also have the level of, like, kind of like what you did with Apple Valley, and having it as a background cameo appearance, as if it's a television show or it's a poster for a movie or it's something outside of the regular reality of that world.
Those are more almost like shout-outs as opposed to, you know, that's...
I almost consider those Easter eggs.
Yeah, kind of, really. It's you know, and that's the thing. I will be reading someone's comic and just, like, going through, and I'll be like, oh my god, Gayzilla's in the background of this comic. How did Gayzilla wind up... I don't even know... How did Gayzilla wind up over here? And it was... Usually they're all from, like, right after Gayzilla took off a couple of years ago and everybody loved him before I sort of stopped doing anything involved with Gayzilla. But I really have to do more Gayzilla stuff.
Hey, Pride Month is coming up, dude.
Yeah, I know. I just...
Why do you think I included Gayzilla in my crossover thing that I did for you with the Kitten of Chaos? I mean, he's got to show up. It's just all there's to...
Well, I came up with such an awesome story, and I have, like, no idea how to draw it. The Gayzilla versus the Village Force 5, a Power Rangers Village People-inspired... team.
That's
of
beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's beautiful. It's too beautiful for me to draw.
Now we're talking guest comics.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Well, maybe you can ask Liz to do that. She knows all about giant robots. And
But now the question is, what do you know about the village people? And that's
they did YMCA.
Awesome. Good enough. No.
Is that about all you need to know?
Well, it turns out the village people corresponded really well to, like, the Power Rangers, because you've got the police one, that's blue, and the navy one, that's white, and the biker one, that's black, and the construction worker, that's yellow, and the Indian, who's red. So it corresponded straight down the line to the standard Power Ranger colors.
I know that we are making Taka Comics very happy right now. We're talking about Power Rangers.
Yes. No, it wasn't Battle Fever J. That was similar but different. So, okay, back to
During this whole entire conversation, I went to go take a look at Woody After Hours. And have you guys read that one?
No. I've read parts of that.
Right.
That one's basically a great big crossover.
Yeah, it's a big, great big cameo crossover, yeah. And it has a different format. It doesn't include people necessarily in the one side of the story, but puts them in the other side of the story, the actual talk show itself. So it doesn't keep it to the main story's canon, only Woody After Hours canon.
Okay.
Sort of.
So is it like a Space Ghost format? Like it's a talk show deal? Or
It's a talk show.
Pretty much, yeah. Nice. And it includes comics from other genres into it.
I think it would be so fun to be on that comic.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
Kind of reminds me of what they were trying to do with webcomic TV. The news show that they did.
That actually sounds like a successful way to get readers, because you can present the personality of a character, and you could actually hook people through this kind of interview format. That sounds to me
absolutely.
Far more
and I found relative. Several comics from this Woody After Hours just by reading Woody After Hours. So, now that's a different form of, cameo than it is to include crossover between the storylines themselves into a unified story, which is the most general crossover.
Unless, of course, in your comic you wrote about your character going to be on the show, and then you brought your, you made it part of your universe that this character was going to go beyond the show.
That would actually be funny, because then you could show the behind the scenes of what was shown.
Yeah, Zombie Roomie actually did that.
Nice.
And apparently he got a girlfriend from it in the comic.
So, all right. So everybody does crossovers, or practically everybody does crossovers at some point in time.
Really hard for a comic like mine to do crossovers.
Well, yeah, it's you get the ones like
yours.
You
already said Gayzilla, get him to show up and fight the robot.
Oh my god!
Well, the original,
that might at least have to be guest art.
Okay. The original question you asked was, how do these people get together?
Yeah.
And, generally, you would say that they met over the internet and started talking and go, hey, our genders are alike, we should hang out. But, more often than not, it's just, friends. These comic authors that have made friends with each other over the internet.
Yeah. And
you're sitting at a convention.
Oh, yeah.
Just to decide to do things. It's like, in my own comic, I took Future Paladin from the comic The Best of What's Left.
Yeah.
And I brought him in as a small cameo kind of a position at one point, and now basically he's become a canon character in my comic.
Well,
So, when you start developing out in that direction, then it really sticks in there. Then, you use these things because you know these people from online and you want to use some of their stuff, and, all works out eventually.
That's kind of how I wound up with Ralph and Bimbo from Exploitation Now. Poe said that he really didn't want to do anything with them anymore, and I was like, you mind if I borrow them? I'll keep them warm for you. And then it started out being a joke.
I'll hug
because
him and squeeze him and call him George.
It started out being a joke because one of the big things in
Can
Exploitation
I call you
Now. George? Well, one of the big things in Exploitation Now was that, a third of the way through the story, they got replaced by like new main characters who became the main characters that everybody loved exploitation now about. So when they showed up in my comic, they showed up right after the first like serious story arc, while my characters were sitting drinking on a couch bemoaning the fact that they weren't in the comic anymore.
Nice.
And then it just like later I had an arc back in 2009 where Art, the main character, quit and walked out and like lent himself out as a poor man's Jenny Everywhere to any comic who wanted him for the summer, and Ralph and Bimbo tried to take his place in the comic.
Comic character whores, gotta love it.
I was gonna say, this is why I very, very seldom even approach putting people in any of the stuff that will be coming out, and that is because the whore jokes are too easy, and most people don't want to see their characters maligned in that way.
Yes.
I don't think you can say anything.
Steal Mark from Autumn Lake because he needs to be happy for a weekend. I can't. I will eventually just kill something. You know, it's just too depressing for me.
Yeah,
I need to make him happy for a little while.
I'm pretty sure that you couldn't say or do anything to any of my characters that wouldn't hurt them more than I've already hurt
them.
That
is probably true. So, I mean, there are definitely... It would be odd, though, in a slice-of-life sort of situation to bring any of that madness over.
Well, you've been with me in reality. That's kind of the stuff that follows me around all the time.
That is... I did notice that. That was interesting.
Yeah, it's... It's
a vortex of strangeness that's just...
Yeah, really, my comic is essentially a slice-of-life comic. It's just no one would believe my life unless they were there with me.
Yeah. Just your life.
I've been following the restraining order just fine, thanks.
Okay, so what do people... if there's not really a link benefit other than, you know, like, that you have, hopefully... If you've done your job well and the other person's done the other, you've got a link that's permanently wedged in their archives. What other benefits of doing cameos and crossovers and guest comics? Why do people do this? Which is the you know, like, why is this such a thing? Is it the instant validation, the being part of a community, the fact that you can and it's awesome?
The fact that you don't have to write your own characters for a story plot that you have going on in your head.
The work is already done. You can just...
Characters are already made.
Well, you know, if you want to get a little Freudian about it, it's kind of a form of intimacy. You know, you're taking this thing that was created in the core of your subconscious, and you're connecting it to something else that was created in the core of someone else's subconscious, and they're mingling.
Mental fornication, right on.
Yes.
I do think in a less sexual manner. The community
less
thing.
Sexual.
I know,
you
it's
disappoint
weird.
Disappoint me, Tanya.
Coming from me,
I'm
I know.
I'm more sexual than you are. That's what we've gone to at this point.
Well, okay, you went straight to intimacy, and we know I don't do that well. So.
Well, yes, that's the difference, is I deal with romance and desire.
I'm sorry, romance, intimacy, I don't know those words, so...
Yeah, no, sex I've got. Like, that we're totally on. The other stuff, yeah.
No, I'm a man full of passion.
So the way, you know, it is part of, like, you know, being part of this community, like, I belong here, especially if it's a comic that you admire. You know, I know... Doing guest art for Geek Tragedy was like the biggest squee moment of my early little webcomic career. Those kind of things make you feel like you belong there, like you're on the right track and doing the right thing. I do also think it's a bit of a failure in a cost-benefit analysis, which I think a lot of webcomicers have issues with cost-benefit analysis, where you think, I'm going to put in 12 hours of work in this comic and get 12 million hits, and that never happens.
No.
And I will say that I did, like, my, I was probably second month of doing The Apple of Discord. I did a guest comic for Chain Bear. Mm-hmm. And no one had ever heard of Chain Bear, I don't think, really that much at that point. But now that Chain Bear are, like, doing the Sundays for Sluggy Freelance, mm-hmm. I still get hits from people that are going through their archives and hit my comic I still see that pop up, you know, one or two of those a month, years later from something that I... So there is a little bit of a benefit in that as long as the person that you did the work for or with doesn't screw you over by, like, reformatting everything or removing all the comments and links, it is something that once you do, you can set and forget that you don't really have to actively maintain in order to keep that connection up.
Yeah. And actually, if your analysis is such, you know, like you just described, where, well, you know, I'm going to put this out there, what comes, comes, it's all good, then that's awesome. I mean, that's a decision that you've made. You've decided it was worth the cost. I think a lot of people wind up disappointed because their calculations are incorrect. If you're looking at it as a set it and forget it kind of thing, yeah, it's totally going to be worth it for you. But if you're expecting almost like an advertising bounce, that's probably not going to happen, and you're going to feel like you put in too much.
Well, you know, also from an SEO's perspective, search engine optimization stuff, backlinks also help your search engine ranking.
Indeed.
So if you have this stuff in archived on a bunch of other websites, it's going to help you out.
That is true.
Plus, it's a lot, I would think it's a lot classier to say, you need a guest comic or guest art or something here, then would you please link to my site?
Oh, yeah.
Because then at least you're not coming to them empty-handed. It's not basically like a spec request. You're actually saying, here,
would you like to trade links?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I got a banner.
You know, at this point, we all know that I'm kind of a jerk, and I'm comfortable with that, but I still feel sad when somebody asks me to link to their site. There's an instant, like, I need a shot kind of attitude that comes with that, because I just feel bad. Because I know that if a comic isn't something I like, I'm not going to link to it, and I'm going to have to tell this person, who's clearly such a newbie that they're still asking people for links, no, I don't like it. You know, but if somebody says, hey, I want to do guest art for you, or can I do this, or can I use a character, or those kind of things, none of that depression there. There's no pressure. It's all good, because it's, you know, it's a contribution. It's not panhandling.
Oh.
Yeah. The link requests are panhandling. It is.
We have a disagreement from the chat room, and I'm curious to see what the...
Yes!
Wait, there's a chat room?
Yeah, yes. I can't get into it right now.
Well, there's... Deadhaven Heaven says, what's wrong with exchanging links? And nothing's wrong with exchanging links. It's the, like, cold solicitation of, could you link to me?
And even, you know, but... If you don't know me, if I have no relation to you at all, and you're asking me to swap links, that it feels like somebody showing up at the door to sell me something. It feels weird. At least have a decent pitch. Like, you know, I noticed our genres are really similar, and I have this thing coming up, and I thought it would be great if we could exchange links. That's at least, I don't know, communicative.
Yeah, or
seriously, I know these people for years, and these people still don't link to my sites.
I used to link to you, but I think that may have that's the other problem with link exchanges, especially if you're using like a WordPress or something as a core. I've redesigned the Apple of Discord probably 7 or 8 times since it started a couple of years ago. There may have been links to a lot more people 3 or 4 designs ago than there are now, but if your links are in the comment, like in the actual like posts from me, those do stay put.
Yeah.
Yes.
I used to have a whole link page on Betapwned, and no one ever went there. So
no,
I stopped doing it.
Well, yeah, I think
why bother.
I think
you
the
know,
death
I was
of
updating it all the time and making sure the links were still good and why.
The death of my link page was when I went back and noticed that, like, 2/3 of the comics that I'd linked to hadn't updated in a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my god, where did all my friends go? They all wandered off and disappeared, and it made me really sad, because I was like, I loved this comic, and I'd sort of not noticed that it disappeared, and then I was looking at my links, and I was like, ah, what happened to them? Why did you go away? And that's,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather stay. I'd rather have
with the way sites are set up. It's better off to go to the site, make a comment on pages, and they will actually add a link that way. And it's just probably better off than asking for a physical link.
Yeah, I'd rather have a connection with a person than I would a link. Yeah. So that's
it's gonna do you better in the long run too.
Yes.
Well, yes. We're going to take a break for just a minute here so that I can feed the gerbil that's running this entire operation. And we will be back in just a second.
Yeah, man. It's been overcast, you know what I'm saying? Yo, man. Crazy, dog. Yo, what I'm saying, it's been real. It's been real getting back up here, dog.
I think that there's some real danger, not only of recession, but I think we're rapidly getting into a depression. The unemployment situation is getting worse and worse and worse. And I think the statement adds up to a picture of national disaster.
Broken economics. It's all about the profit, try and stop it. Take the key away and lock it. Back to the topic, on the corner selling tropics. You keep the weight up in your pocket. Paying homage to the door, never stutter when I drop it. Supreme Aquonics, keep them hooked on like phonics. Thugonomics, do you get with deadly violence? Sounds of silence, pissed that don't with vocal sirens. Local tyrants, blazing scene with fatal virus. Lacking knowledge, rather solving with the bullets flying. I'm talking problems, all of us different but all got them. Time to wake up, vision the way the devil climbs. Take heed of the warning, play your position, yes, young brother. Right. All over the cast, rapidly we killing our jumper. And it feels good to have it. Taking money out your pocket to get the money in my pockets. Broken economics is critical. Forced to work for socks just to make it in this pitiful existence. Pounds turn to pences, dollars making sense, kid. Think about it, counting up the money I collected without it feeling naked. Everything is hectic. Gotta get the dough, though. Broke stacking money up in slow-mo for real, though. The ill, yo. Need to get this cash like a free for her dildo.
Money ain't a problem just as long as you have it. Without it, like no knowledge, you go savage. While others commit crimes a lot, trying to grab it. Create minds born in the mind and live last.
The inflation, unemployment, the economic situation.
Yeah, I got bad habits, so I mismanaged, and I did damage to my finances. Yo, I got branded, manhandled, dismantled. My lands in shambles, had plans and gambled, had lands they trampled, had plans they canceled. I did time and that's the lesson. They keep it tight like an asshole. That's why I must blow up like Vito Castro. One waterfall that consists of cash flow. Become a professional and get in the fast dough. Make it last like your last hope on the strip. Big up to the pimps, players, hustlers, stick up gun busters and street scholars. Brothers who went to college had guidance from the fathers. Addicted to cash knowledge like alcoholics. Struggling with broken economics. Paying homage to the mighty dollar. Torrential hurricane comma, if not in arm's reach. That's why I must teach or destroy. And the core diamonds in the rough, and that's financially enough. Money ain't a problem just as long as you have it. Without it, like no knowledge, you go savage. While others commit crimes and lie, trying to grab it. I create rhymes born in the mind and live lavish.
Fall classic, 2002.
2002.
All in your area, like malaria.
Fall classic.
Flavor. Like a Bombay.
That was Broken Economics by Rahim Samad, if I'm saying that right, from musicalley.com by Medio.
Enter the chat.
Oh no, two different things at once? Are you sure it won't kill your Skype?
I don't think so. I'm plugged in and...
Yeah, maybe that's the problem, that you keep trying to get onto a talk show and such and it kills you.
You know, it doesn't seem to have any actual pattern. I've tried You know, I'm good with the whole scientific process thing, and there seems to be just no variable on my end that I can change to improve my connection. So I have to assume it's just the area that I'm in. I'm in a really rural area, so our internet is spotty.
If it helps, I'm podcasting from the shed behind my house today.
Awesome! That is so Unabomber. I love it.
Yes, Adam's been sent to the tool shed.
Plus, oh, I do have the super beard going now. It's a couple of months ago, one of my coworkers who is universally kind of despised by practically everyone came in after a vacation and he had a goatee. At which time I decided the goatee has become the new mullet. I am moving on to a new thing. And so I have moved on to the, I'm calling it the Galifianakis.
Nice. I love the Galifianakis.
I am sporting as much facial hair as I can.
That's brilliant.
It's sort of like the goatee plus the badassest mutton chops that I can manage.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like bright red, which is sort of funny since...
I was going to say the ginger thing adds.
That's yeah. Excellent. Yeah, because that's not the color of my hair, but it is the color of my beard.
That's lovely.
You're the biggest dwarf ever.
And, you know, if you want to complete the look, the FBI is now auctioning off the Unabomber's, hoodie and the glasses and his typewriter and all that stuff. So,
did you hear that they're looking at him now because they think that he may have been the one that was responsible for the Tylenol poisoning?
Yeah.
That's some crazy stuff. Now all they have to do is figure out where he was standing when he shot JFK.
Basically, he was in
when he shot JFK. Yeah, he was crossing over.
Yeah.
Blowing up buildings with the New Order.
So, we're going to move on to the second phase of our discussion here. We're going to take advantage of the fact that we have a comic press expert here in the form of one Mr. Philip Hofer.
Hofer?
I think I've always stuck an extra F in there in my brain and done it like Hofer, because it's not something I've ever had to say. So, but
it's like you give your Hofer.
You know him as Frump, the comic.
Frump with an F at the end, by the way. So it's Frump. Yes.
It's the sound that you make when you sit down really hard on the couch. It's
sibilance. Sibilance.
Well, it's a sound effect that's attributed to a lot of different things, actually.
I'm going to stick with the couch.
That'll work just fine.
Just so, like when I fall over, I go, vidaboof.
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 I like to say that.
I'm going to have to use frumph as a sound effect on one of my pages.
Yeah.
I think we're all mentally trying to figure out how to put that in there now.
The last one, Short Pact, did one with a sound effect a couple weeks ago, or months ago. It's been a while.
Wonder if I can work it into the scene that's going to be coming up at the beginning of Chapter 5.
So, now this isn't... I don't want to specifically just go into comic press. This is... I think I want to talk more about...
I think Fez wanted to do a show about that at one point.
Yeah, and we'll let Fez have that... we'll let Fess have that when we come to it. But I want to talk to you and to our assembled panel here about webcomic site design as a whole. Now, I know they just did a big episode on site design. My main question is, we seem to have settled on a fairly standardized navigation button array.
Indeed.
And deviating off of that seems to be heresy almost at this point. Yes. You can, throw little links if you want to, like, cartoon arrows instead of ASCII arrows, or if you wanted to say, like, next, first, but there doesn't really seem to be... I know with the expanded comic press you've been working on, you've got a lot of options now for different things like start of the chapter, next in the chapter, different things like that. but there doesn't really seem to be a lot of room for movement in that field. It seems like we've kind of hit a wall.
A cassette deck.
Yep, standard.
Sort of standard, yeah.
Evolution of the species, man.
We've reached a stable point, and there's no need to evolve further, I think is where most people are falling.
But really,
I talked to Adam a little bit about this earlier on Twitter, but basically it's not an involved thing. It's more of a, you want your readers to be familiar with being able to navigate your site, and to keep a uniformative approach to it is more beneficial than trying to evolve past to a different segment situation. Right.
But is there no room for innovation anymore on this one? Because, I know people say, you know, we've reached the cassette deck state, and that's great. But when was the last time you actually looked at a remote control for, oh, say, a DVD player? It doesn't just have the four buttons on it. It's got, like, 50 on it. Yes. It's got the four that you need, and they make sure that those are prominent. But there's room for other buttons.
There's a feature that I installed on a comic site recently that actually expands upon that, is when you mouse over the comic itself, the buttons for all the extra stuff appear at that time.
Nice.
Kind of like how the remote control additive there that you were talking about. You're not stuck to the buttons, but it's at least gives the current readers a familiarity of having something that they know and can find immediately with their eyes. Going past that, it's just up to the programmer, the person designing the site. I don't think we're limited, no.
What do you think it would take to break out of the mold and add a new dimension to it? Because one of the reasons I am a big fan of Comic Press, and while...
That's right, why you wrote your own, right?
Well, give it a second here. I'm a big fan, I tend to help people out as best I can with my limited knowledge if they're having Comic Press problems and better people aren't available.
I think that's basically because you're a really nice guy. So,
well, yeah, I'm a sap, but the thing that got me is I read an unhealthy number of comics, and after a while,
aren't you married?
Yes, I am.
That's why he reads so many comics.
Okay.
Hey, she has her fanfic. I have my webcomics. We sit and have meaningful communication via silence next to one another on the couch with laptops. It's a beautiful arrangement.
It's one I read. It sounds similar to ours.
You guys tweet each other in order to get new coffee made, right?
Actually, yeah, we sort of do. I'm horrible that way, but
anyways, going on.
But yeah, it's I like Comic Press. I'm not good with Comic Press. I would have done everything that I did through Comic Press if I could have, but the universal
Comic Press is limited, so you know.
Yeah, the universal sameness of design, which isn't any one person's failing. It's the failing of everybody out there who. You know, yes, it works out of the box, but, you know...
Is it a failing? I think that's your personal opinion on that.
Okay, that is my personal opinion of it. But I think... I perceive it to be a failing of people to not even try and, like, customize a little bit, you know? Change the background color or the font or something. Just... To me, it says, when I go to a comic, if I see the default Comic Press, I'm like, this person...
You see someone who is focusing as an artist and not as a programmer or web designer that probably doesn't have enough money to hire somebody to do it.
If it looks like that in their comic, then yes. But if it doesn't, then that's a bad sign.
I've worked with some members of who are actually, you know, King Features Syndicate represent them. And they have no idea what to do. Of course, they have money, but they have no idea what to do or how to get, you know, the assistance that they need, who to hire or anything like that. There's a lot of different factors. You can't just focus on that one particular thought right there. That's just my opinion.
No, yeah, nobody, not everybody can go in and start editing code and customize their sites. I mean, not everybody's good at that.
Right. Well, that's why I added the WordPress functions for custom background and custom header, so that it can be a lot easier for them to just do it by command line.
And once the Easel project or the Weasel. No, the comic Easel with your white Weasel thing.
That's Comic Easel.
Yeah.
Once there's a plugin, there's a hosting. They're both the same thing.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So what do you think, just give me a guess, what would be the next innovation in navigation?
HTML5. HTML5 is going to expand upon the web when people start actually creating good sites for it. But it allows for a lot better interactivity, like as if you're using a remote from a television system. It'll allow faster, easier displaying of content, as well as more animated abilities on your website to keep the user focused.
Okay, when you say animated abilities to keep the user focused, what type of things are you talking about?
Websites can be dull. They're static. Their positioning, you know, the background itself. You have a solid background with maybe a picture of one of your characters in it or something, or landscaping or anything like that. With HTML5, you can actually have in that landscape in the background have a butterfly fly by while you're reading the webcomic. You could have seasons actually appear in. Change in HTML5 while you're sitting there stationary reading the webcomic.
See, I have an issue with that. I'm concerned wouldn't that draw your eye? Like, you know, maybe it's the ADD talking. Obviously, I can't finish a sentence.
Of course, there's always going to be, you know, the end user's focus on what you're doing, but I mean, it's going to give a little bit more of an emphasis towards a more creative website for everything from navigation to presentation.
Okay.
I just see this as being like 10 years down the road, we're all going to be sitting around and go, yeah, remember when we had GeoCities 2 breakout after HTML5 came out? Because for every person that's going to be able to use it well and is going to do something really impressive, there's going to be
millions
20
of people who are just going to try to copy it.
There's going to be 20,000 script kiddies out there who are going to have who are going to use it as basically like the next generation version of the blink tag.
Yeah.
Well, have you ever seen
any tool for that?
You have an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
You know how you navigate your command panels in the Xbox, where you just rotate things around? That's pretty much what you can do with HTML5.
Now, see, and that I think does have a lot of potential, especially, I talked the last Beacon about things like having a library where you pull chapters off of a shelf and open those up and read them like you would books and things like that that are very graphically pleasing and that you could really do a lot of scene setting with. You know, especially for fantasy comics and things where you are trying to transport people into other worlds. And in that sense, I think it's completely and absolutely worth it. My fear is that, like the blink tag, people are going to start using all the shinies for your average gag-a-day.
And that so is going to happen. That will happen.
Then it'll look like a MySpace page.
Yes, giant, gaudy, sparkling, yeah.
And then you can have more fodder for your podcast.
Well, there is that.
So. Yeah, but then I have to read them, and I don't want to. I'm a little leery of this. We should have innovation, and we should do. And I'm like, okay, cost benefit analysis here. What are we trying to do? How much time are we going to put into this innovation of the way a comic navigates or the way an archive works when? What are we getting out of it? I can see instances like with a fantasy comic where you're drawing someone into another world where that makes perfect sense. I think for most of us, that would just be a huge waste of time, and that last and next works really well. And I think that's probably why so many people just don't bother. No?
Well, but do you think if we... is this a if you build it, they will come sort of thing? Or do you think it's... to the cost-benefit analysis point, is there a point in trying to improve the website experience? Or because when it comes down to it and you chop a comic up into, like, the average comic website up into the component pieces, there are only so many ways that you can stick those pieces together. Right. And still have it be something recognizable to a person as a website. That, you know what I mean? Like, it's like one of those things where you've got, like, the, you know, the thing that's 4x1 of blocks, and then, like, Tetris, basically.
Yeah, it's Tetris, exactly. Yeah,
there's only so many possible combinations for website Tetris. So, the question really is mm-hmm. you know, I see some people out there who do... who implement some really neat ideas and then take them down because people hate them.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder, is it worth the effort of trying to come up with something new with the likelihood that it's going to fail versus what's the cost of people just giving up and going with the same old, and leaving the innovation completely up to other people?
Well, that's the question you always get down to, is most people don't do anything different because they don't want to risk failing. They want to play it safe and don't doing anything out of the comfort zone.
Well, it's only the rebels out there. What was that Flash comic that was around for a little while? It was like some people were fighting over who was the best Flash comic. Tip of the tongue. Come on.
I know. I'm trying to remember what it is. It's, yeah, the girl with the post-apocalyptic future thing and the robot machine people and the...
It was sponsored by DC or something like that.
Oh, no, I was thinking of something else, but...
Yeah.
All I remember is one that had, like, human dogs fighting one another.
Yeah, well, the point is, you don't remember who that was, do you?
Yeah, because it was at that point, it was just a gimmick. It wasn't really an applied, built-in part of the comic body itself. It was coating a gloss that they put over the top of it to make it shiny and pretty.
Yes. But, I mean, that's what you get down to. I mean, whenever you...
Oh, okay.
Anybody tries to go outside...
Lizzie? Lizzie.
Oh, yeah. Lizzie was one of them.
Chat room. Thank you, chat room.
Thank you. anytime you go outside the comfort zone and you try to do something that no one else is doing, yeah, there's always the chance that you're going to be slapped down because people don't get it. It's confusing. It's weird. It's, you know, it's a new kind of fire. Nobody's seen it before. They're afraid of it.
And people are lazy.
And people are lazy, and they don't want something new when they have to figure out again. They don't want to have to think and see what's going on.
I think one of the most like illuminating experiences I had with stats ever was when I found out how long people were spending on my site reading any given comic. It was less than 5 seconds, and I'd read a whole comic.
Oh yes.
Yeah, why the hell am I going to spend hours and hours and hours when they are reading the comic, clicking next, reading the comic, clicking next, going to another site?
Yes.
Well, they don't care.
But if that's true, then how come we haven't completely bypassed the traditional website at this point and gone to just like galleries? I mean, with Lightbox and stuff like that. I've seen some comics that have tried to use Lightbox or other things like that to display their comic, and it's a neat idea, but I've never seen it implemented well. And if the website was really completely disposable, we would have broken free of the page at some point in time and gone to... something, some higher, some freer, some floatier kind of like...
Well, it's not that it's not necessary, it's that when you look at a page, statistically speaking, when designing websites, you will have 3 seconds to get someone's attention for them to look at it, and they must be able to find what they're going to get to within 4 clicks of the front page. And so you can only do so much shifting around before you lose it, because if somebody looks at something within those 3 seconds, they can't figure out what they're supposed to do, they're going to give up and leave. Yeah. So, I mean, when you go outside of the comfort zone, you risk losing everything.
And you also have issues with compatibility. People using different browsers, different computers, different sites. Some things are blocked. They don't use JavaScript. They don't use this. They don't use that. I want as many people as possible to be able to see my site. And so, but to that end, you know, once I realize they're spending 5 seconds at the site, the site I'm designing now has virtually nothing there. There is a menu on the top if you want to spend time there. Other than that, there is last and next and a comic. And
minimalist.
Extremely minimalist. I've, you know, even to the point of black and white, so that your eyes immediately drawn to the comic, you read the comic.
Well, let's take that for a second. Let's take that thought is how long your readers stay at your website and what kind of website that you need to keep them to stay longer. Mm-hmm. Now, there are certain people like Theater Hopper. He has reviews. He has snaps. He has information in posts that for movie industry and otherwise that expand upon his website, which keep readers more interested in being there. Now, 90% of the other webcomics do not have that.
Yeah.
So they really don't need everything for their site there.
Well, technically, he probably doesn't need the comic there. I'm serious. I'm not... If you removed the comic from that, it would still be a perfectly functioning, like, movie review and industry website. Just like the thing where so many new-to-webcomic creation people will try to emulate, like, Penny Arcade, and they think that they don't need the comic on the front page right there in people's faces, and they're like, well, Penny Arcade doesn't do it. And it was like, there are people who don't care about Penny Arcade's comic. They are there for the blog. Plus, when you can just write a check and it appears in front of you, you can do whatever you want with design.
Exactly. You're not Penny Arcade. You know, it's we repeat it over and over and over again whenever anybody says, but Penny Arcade, you're not Penny Arcade. Move on. And I like having that other content there because I do want people to stay at the site. But frankly, they're not going to stick around the comic. I have the menu at the top. There's other stuff there. The people that are going to that other stuff, in my experience, go there and spend time at my site because of me, not because of the comic.
So let's throw this out to the people who actually listen to the podcast. Ooh, and
Both of them. Hey, guys.
Hey. Hi.
And we of course, will, all, as always, have the comment section enabled on the website. Plus, you can tweet back to the Webcomic Beacon on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon, or track down any of us. I'm curious to actually see how many of you, and I'll put whatever results I get from the ether onto the Webcomic Beacon site, how many of you actually care about anything other than the comic that is on a webcomic site? How much of it, like cast page and about page and stuff like that, is really just how much of it is the author just basically masturbating with his own work and and doing it entirely at that point for his own effort? And how many of it, as a person who reads webcomics, actually matters to the reader? Because I'm curious what the answer... I'm a little horrified what the answer is going to wind up being on that, but I'm curious, too, to how much effort are we wasting on stuff that the readers don't care about?
I care about that stuff if either I'm like an about page or a cast page, if I'm doing guest art, or if I really like the comic, or if they're a friend. But most of my comics I read in RSS reader.
Yep.
So after it gets in my RSS reader, I sometimes don't even go to the site.
And I have to admit, it's the same thing. Whenever I've gone through the trouble of going through FAQs and all of that other stuff, it's because something about the creator has captured my attention. It's been their social networking, you know, the, what they Twittered last night or whatever else made me think I should learn more about this person. Not, oh, that's a really funny comic. Let's go read everything else on the site. Like, that's never happened. I've never had that thought.
Yes. How many of you actually look at the behind-the-scenes footage on the DVDs?
I do,
all the time.
I do.
Yes.
And I think there's always going to be a percentage. There's always going to be people who do it. So to have it available, I think, is awesome. But again, cost-benefit analysis. How much time are you going to spend on that, knowing what kind of percentage of your audience is going to care?
Well, on the other side of the coin, you've got things like Yet Another Fantasy Gamer comic that I read. And I wish that he had more information about the world that he created. But he doesn't have it available from his website.
And actually, that brings up a good point. If you have a story comic, those things make a heck of a lot more sense. But
right,
even
right.
on these, you know, Gagaday type sites, you still see about and FAQ and characters and, you know, blah, blah, blah. You still see all of that. And I think it's, again, because it's become standard and people think they need to because the other comics do. You don't need to. If it's going to benefit you or if it's just something, you know, mental masturbation, yeah, go for it. But...
Everybody needs a buy print button.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
My goodness. Why not?
Yeah, I still have to figure out how to get that working. But I want one. I just haven't quite mastered it yet. And
just implement a service. It's faster.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just...
I don't want to, frankly, print it out myself. I'm sorry. So.
Yeah. No. I'm lazy, too. I'm...
Mm-hmm.
So let's take another break real quick here, and then we're going to change gears into the final leg. And I think Mike may have to go because he said he had somebody coming for him.
This is the first time I've actually talked to Mike in person.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics host and community at rampagenetwork.com. And don't forget, we broadcast live on Sundays at webcomicbeacon.com/live. Join our live chat room, have news reports or Becky art, transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Questions? Dial our voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. And now, back to our show.
Yes, diddly squats. It's one size fits all. Great for the entire family. It's diddly squat.
All right. Now, I will say, I saw Liz mention something in the chat, and just to go back real quick to the cast page and stuff, once a comic... we're talking small comics here. You know, we're talking...
Which is 90% of the comics.
Yeah, we're talking...
Including yours.
Yeah, we're talking to you, the people who are, for the most part, listening to this.
Mike and Jerry are not listening with bated breath, waiting to see what we say about what we're on the page.
Oh, yeah. They are. You don't know it, but they are.
Yeah, we're talking to the majority of the webcomics out there when we say... most of this stuff, you know, once a comic reaches a certain like fan base, you really got to start putting stuff out like that, but you can also use your fan base. Like, Errant Story, who I do a bunch of like behind the scenes work for, has one of the most insanely detailed and comprehensive cast things through their wiki. And none of them do any of the, neither Impy nor Poe do practically any work on the wiki. The wiki is done entirely by the readers of the comic. Mm-hmm. So, don't be afraid to put people to work for you if they were willing to do it. But
that's a whole other episode right there.
Yeah.
People are crazily willing to do it because they want to be part of this community too. And, you know, to go back to the beginning here, it's why we do guest comics for people, and it's why we do these cameos and crossovers, is it gives us this sense of community and of belonging to something. And you know what? Your readers want that too. They want to feel part of your community. If you're, you know, I guess a decent human being, and are kind of out there, if you're making the effort to touch base with them, they'll want to touch base with you. And part of the way they'll want to do that is by doing stuff for you. It makes them feel involved in something they like.
I completely agree with that, because I often feel like I'm floating out in space. So if I do like a guest art for somebody and they like it, it makes me feel like, oh, good, you know, somebody out there cares.
Well, you know, still here.
The webcomics community has a really interesting dynamic, and I think probably as far as business models go, there's not been anything that has been ever like webcomics before, except possibly musicians. And I actually follow a few musicians that I've run into just like on Twitter. And I was talking to one of them, Matt Stevens of the Fierce and the Dead. And what they do for their albums, because they do album releases, but when they release something, they release it as a pay however much you want to.
Yeah.
And that actually, from what I can tell, is working far better than I would expect that it actually was going to. But I think that when you get to, we're essentially, the majority of webcomic artists are virtual buskers. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what busking is, go look it up. It's an awesome old word. It's the, like, the street performers of yore.
Yeah.
We're out there.
Followers of the internet.
Yeah, we're out there. We're throwing our best stuff at the internet for free, hoping to get something back out of it.
Made love you a long time?
Yeah, the unrealistic ones are wanting to become internet famous and get tons of money and to never have to work again and to be able to draw stick figures for the rest of their life. And for the, like, 1% of 1% of 1% that works out for that one guy, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Welcome to XKCD.
Yeah. To, it works really well for him because he's a really good writer and he has a very strong niche. But it's already filled now.
Yeah.
we're done. Niche is full. Move on or starve.
But the thing that gets me is there is such a decent community to webcomics, and then it breaks down into smaller things. Like when I'm doing the how not to thing and I get to the topic of niche comics, one of the things that I mention is with like furry comics. Each time you go into a sub layer of webcomics to pick a more specific type of comic, you eliminate a lot of the, like, out of the 100% of potential readers that you could have. Say if you decide to go furry, you eliminate 2/3 of them right off the bat, and of the 1/3 that you keep, maybe 2/3 of them are going to be ambivalent towards your decision, and 1/3, which is now 1/3 of 1/3, is going to just love you for the fact that you're doing a furry comic. So the closer you get, it's Daniel Tosh does a joke where he says that he likes to narrow his jokes down until he gets to the point where there's just one guy in the audience laughing at him, because the joke has now become funny to only that one person.
Exactly. And it's never me.
It's always me. I'm always that one person. I get all the way to the end, and I'm looking around, and I'm the only one that's still with him. Yeah, it's the ADD at work.
Yeah, I tried to watch that show, but I couldn't watch it. It was like, movie reviews? That's what the internet's for. Get off TV.
Oh, no. What I'm talking about is stand-up.
Oh, stand-up's a whole nother concept. I'm just talking about
Tosh 2.0, but yeah.
Who's the moron that decided it's a good idea to watch, you know, videos that are a month old on a TV show? Well, it's like, we're past that already. Let's move on.
They do have these things called reruns that you may have been... Was that a rerun?
No, this is... They review videos from the internet that are like a month and a half old already. We've already moved past it. And they're just getting to it.
I'm getting to the topic, chat room.
Anyway.
I'm watching you. I see what you're saying. No, we're getting to the... But the... So, another piece of cost-benefit analysis is... if you are not, like, if you are not absolutely sold, you know, your heart doesn't cry out that you need to draw your anthropomorphic aardvark as your main character. What, like, the benefit of picking a smaller, less traveled niche where there aren't a bunch of people who have already done the same thing versus the like cost of finding out that you are in fact the only person who has gone out into this limb because nobody wanted to be out on that limb. How do you, you know,
I think it has to be a genuine niche. And by that, I mean, it has to be a community you're part of. If you're trying to tap into a community because you think that they will make a good niche, you know, to make money from or popularity or whatever else.
How many times are you guys going to say niche?
8,000.
It's their favorite word.
So, I mean, is that your niche or what?
Yes, a niche. Mine. But they like saying niche. Yes.
Maybe it's a regional thing. I don't know. Now I'm completely lost. No, it's good. If it's not genuine, if it's not really part of you, it's not going to work anyway. So
people are
going to
notice
instantaneously. You know, so choosing. I'm going to do it again. Choosing a niche based on what you think will work as far as gaining you an audience is almost always going to be a terrible idea.
All right.
It should be something you fall into somewhat naturally.
Okay,
but so isn't that a genre?
Maybe it's just not your fort.
Okay.
All right. Look here.
All right. So let's flip that around then. What if in your heart, in your tiny beating little artist heart of hearts, you really,
brain,
really
yes.
want to do a comic which looks almost exactly like Penny Arcade? Do you resist the temptation of being the most derivative, horrible, even though, you know, I mean, like, okay, I have Cinematic for the People, the live, like, MST Rocky show thing that I'm trying to do at conventions. But I came up with Cinematic for the People in 2001, when it was a live access...
I have a phone call.
When it was a public access cable TV show that was only shown, like, at 3 o'clock in the morning in the Cincinnati area for like 3 months. That was where it started, and then in 2002 it was a webcomic that I did, and now it's a live show that I'm trying to do. Since then, of course, Cinematic Titanic came out, and now, instead of being like my own unique creation, people brand Cinematic for the People as like a fan homage to Cinematic Titanic, and so I have to balance whether I want people to think that I'm, whether I want to be like that guy and think that, have people think that I'm copying off of them. Granted, I am copying off of MST3K, but.
But, yeah, that's another.
That's a different sort of thing.
And this is, you know, a cost benefit analysis is always going to be a personal thing. If fulfilling the dreams of your heart of hearts is more important to you than if it's worth the cost of being considered unoriginal or being, you know, constantly compared or whatever else, then fine. You've made that analysis and you've decided getting this created and doing this thing that I love is more important to me. It's worth that cost. And that's great. It's always going to be an individual thing. If, however, you know, what you're willing to pay for, your cost is, you know, popularity and love and all of those other things, then that's not going to be a good way to go. It's not going to be a good cost benefit.
Well, honestly, if you're looking for popularity and love and money, then webcomics are not a good way to go in the first place.
I don't know. I've gotten a lot of love and I've gotten some money. It's possible, and
well,
you know.
See, it's supposed to be a lot of money and some love. It's the other way around.
Oh, I didn't get that. And the other way.
I've hung up on Mike because we don't need to know what he was talking about. He'll be back or not.
Maybe.
But yeah, that's. I think it's just. I think it's really important that. I don't think that a lot of people think, and oh, well, I don't mean that
in, every day.
I don't mean that as mean as it actually sounds, but the point of this episode was I wanted to raise some questions to make people actually question why they make some of the decisions that they make, because I think there's a lot of people who go into webcomics and who do webcomics who are ultimately completely unprepared for half of the stuff that they're getting themselves into because they didn't think it out as to what they were doing or why they were doing it or how they were doing it in advance. And so that was the point of Beaconomics here today, is to encourage a philosophy of people actually thinking about the decisions that they're making, especially when it comes to things like the cost-benefit analysis and what the incentives are. And
like really quickly, at the forefront of my mind, I try to keep the phrase, what's the point? If you're constantly thinking, what's the point behind whatever you're doing, there will always be a thought process of if what you're doing is going to accomplish the goal you're headed toward. Just what's the point of me doing this? What's the point of me spending an hour on the about page? What's the point? You know, keep that in mind and you'll always be thinking about it. And thinking about it is good.
Well, I think that one of the reasons people don't think about it as much as they probably ought to be is because they bullshit themselves by running some sort of like secondary subroutine where they go, this is an artistic pursuit. I don't have to understand what I'm doing because it's art. And it is, and that's completely okay. But if it's art that you intend to keep doing, it's art that has to be sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah. So you either need a second job to support this. And again, is it worth it to you? Or, you know, do you want to eat ramen forever because your art is important to you? If you do, awesome. Then you have achieved your goal. Then you're still sticking with the point.
No, they still need to move to Portland.
Is ramen cheaper in Portland? Or is there something I'm missing? I don't understand.
Some people like ramen.
I enjoy real ramen, but if I'm buying brick ramen at the store, it's because I made a mistake. Like, there's been a problem this month.
Yeah, it's... I had a friend in college, and I had a pickup truck. I was the guy that had the pickup truck. Just like Frump was saying earlier about how I tend to help people out with comic press, I used to be the guy who had the pickup truck that you called when you had to move.
Yeah.
And they called me at like 2 o'clock in the morning and said, and this is when I lived in downtown Cincinnati and they lived in downtown Columbus, which is like 2 hours away. And they said, can you be here at 8 o'clock in the morning? And this was at 2 o'clock in the morning that they're asking this. And so after a few more hours of sleep, I get in the truck, gas her up, because gas was like 99 cents a gallon, thank God, back then, because this thing just ate gasoline. And boogied up to Columbus, because it turns out that the roommate of my friend had spent the entire month's rent buying a corset, because she was a person who also performed at the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was why they had to move as stealthily as they could, as quickly as they could, because they were about to get all of their stuff thrown out on the street. So
that's somebody who wasn't thinking, what's the point? You know, really?
Yeah. There's a lot of things I would like to have. I don't.
I'd love to have one of those. Silly. I'd love to have a, what is it, the Cintiq? The, like, oh super God. Wacom.
The big grand.
It is completely wasted on me. I am a terrible artist. Buying a really expensive pen is not going to make me a better artist. It might make things slightly better. Just a teensy bit. And that actually brings me real quick to the last thing that I wanted to hit. And I had this thought. I'm going to do another Beacon show in the future where we're going to talk about some Photoshop alternatives. Mm-hmm. And while I was having this discussion on the webcomic list with some other people, and I see actually a couple of them are in the chat room right now, one of the things that I hit, which this had never occurred to me before, and I don't know if this is something that has ever occurred to anybody else, but I think that Photoshop has actually, like, practically killed off the art program industry by being as expensive as it is. Now, here's the logic behind this. When you have a program that's like $700 for the base package, not talking about the essentials, but I'm talking about like the standard Photoshop, right? People who want Photoshop have one of two choices. They either pony up $700 or they steal it. Yeah. And with the internet, stealing it is free, and there's very little ramifications for that sort of thing. So a bunch of people who really have no business having Photoshop, not because they can't afford it, though they probably can't afford it, but also because they have no idea how they're using it. Mm-hmm. People who really, you know, Photoshop is a complicated tool for people who actually understand it, and it's way too complicated for a majority of the people out there who are using it, especially the ones who are using it who didn't pay $700. Because I tell you, if I pay $700 for something, I'm going to know how every single function of it works.
Yeah.
So you get a low entry cost, which is breaking the law, in order to get Photoshop, and then you have a bunch of people who have no idea how to use it, adding to the cult of people who claim that it is as good as it is. This feeds into a secondary market, which is all of the people who would have bought, say, PaintShop Pro, or right. Painter, or one of the other programs that's a couple of $100. I use PaintTool Sci myself as my big thing. All of the people who would have potentially bought those now have the option of buying the $700 program for free.
Yeah.
It disincentivizes the other programs to try and do anything other than ape Photoshop. And if you want to see how this works, watch the name of PaintShop Pro from when Jask had it to when Corel took it over. It was PaintShop Pro. Then it became PaintShop Pro Photo. Then it became PaintShop Photo Pro. And I'm pretty sure they're going to eventually wind up evolving it into Photoshop Paint Pro and hope that nobody notices it's not the same thing as Photoshop.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's probably why Photoshop doesn't go after the piracy the way some of the other programs do. They have to realize they've done their own cost-benefit analysis. And they have to know that being this powerful in the market, even if it's being stolen, is killing most of the competition.
Which is one of the reasons why the big competition I found when I was asking people what they use is GIMP. Because GIMP is also free.
Yep.
Because, I mean, if you're going to steal something, why not steal the $700 one, right?
Yeah. But
which means exactly. that they have to compete with the functions of a $700 program and the cost of a free program in order to be able to compete evenly against Photoshop.
Exactly.
And then it leads into a secondary function, which is, imagine this. You've got an Apple store right next to, like, a Best Buy that sells Android tablets. And the Apple store stops locking its doors at night and just leaves giant piles of iPads sitting out there.
Yeah.
Now imagine being an app developer while this is going on. Which platform are you going to develop them for? Are you going to develop them for the one that requires people to actually pay money, or are you going to develop them for the one that people can pay more money for or steal?
Oh, I'm developing for Apple.
Yeah, absolutely. Because so
people will get it.
You get second party or third party support from the filter developers and from, I mean, a lot of programs advance by having other programs rolled into them. You know, this started out being a neat feature that I'm developing that works in conjunction with it. Their parent company buys my parent company, and then it becomes a feature of the main product for the next thing. None of this development is happening for anything other than Photoshop now.
Yeah. It's why you can find 8 million brushes for Photoshop, either for pay or for free online, and so few plugins for GIMP.
Right.
Yeah.
And
third-party support is always going to be, you know, headed toward the people with the largest spread.
So
and probably why so many new people to art think, oh, I need to have Photoshop.
Yeah, it does
it everywhere. You know, so I need to have it. Obviously, I must have it.
Yeah. It does become kind of people assume that it's common sense. You know, oh, I'm going to be doing, even if you're just going to be doing a website and you're looking to do your own headers and things, oh, well, I need to get Photoshop because that's what it's done on.
It becomes the industry standard.
Kleenex. Yeah, it becomes like Kleenex. Nobody uses tissues. We all use Kleenex. We don't eat gelatin. We eat Jell-O. Eventually, it becomes the thing. And, I do think it's happening.
Yes,
and
would you like a Band-Aid?
Exactly.
And you go make a Xerox of something.
Yeah.
And grab some Kool-Aid from the fridge on your way past.
And then, you know, on the way to the internet where you Google for something. And, yeah, it's pervasive. And it does become second nature to people. If I'm going to do graphics, I need Photoshop. There's not thought involved in it. There is a lot of, you know, as human beings, it's part of our nature to go with rote process whenever possible. But we can be better than that if we want to apply ourselves.
So I think we came up with an actual answer for the question and answer thing with Photoshop, which satisfied me, at least as a person trying to think about it intellectually. The question that new webcomic artists should be asking is, what program is the best for me at my skill set? Mm-hmm. And the answer that, like, older, seasoned webcomic people giving them advice should be giving after hearing that question is...
Is Paint.
Well... Photoshop is a really good tool if you're planning on making a big thing out of this, or if you need one of these special features like the formats or for printing to be able to do colors other than RGB, to be able to do any of those things. But it's about finding something that's the right skill level for you. But unfortunately, the conversation generally goes, what's the best program? Photoshop. Because they're not saying all of those extra words that ought to be a part of the conversation, but aren't.
And if you do have a low skill set, Photoshop isn't the best for you. Because there are some complex things that, you know, how many times have we talked to a webcomiker where they finally get to a point where they're ready to put together a book, but they didn't know as much when they started as they know now, so they have to go back and do the first 100 comics over because it turns out Photoshop's a little more complex than they knew at the time, and now none of it's freaking printable, and it all sucks, and they have to go back and apply that new knowledge. If you're using something like GIMP or Aviary, you don't have those mistakes to make because they're not features. And so if you are working with a smaller skill set and you are just working out or just starting out, GIMP and Aviary make a lot more sense. You're going to fuck it up less. Let's be clear. Something like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
You're probably still going to fuck it up, though.
So,
yeah, but in different ways. In easier to fix ways.
So as a non-artsy type.
Yes.
From. Are you with us? I think we may have lost.
Yes.
Oh, there he is.
There he is. Fell asleep.
He just tuned out. He's like, yeah, they're talking about drawing stuff again, aren't they?
I'm going to go code something.
I use Photoshop. Yes, I paid for it. Yes, I did own it illegally before that, but I did purchase it afterwards when I knew its power and necessity.
Well, but you do all of the graphics work for the web design, so, I mean, it's...
Right. It paid for it eventually.
Well, and it's a legitimate use for you. It's not... It's not a status symbol. It's not a, you know, oh, I'm rolling with the big boys because I can have the best tool and all I have to do is compromise my morals.
Derp-a-derp.
Derp-a-derp. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's pretty much how I got to use it to begin with, was I needed its power that no other program had. PaintShop Pro didn't have the ability that I needed. So, you know, Photoshop did.
Yeah.
So.
But there was at least a thought process.
But I think that that's something that people don't necessarily think about when they are stealing things. That it's not just, you know, we're really close to a giant hippie college commune here, where I live now. We're close to Antioch University, and it's sort of shut down now, but it's gonna come back, and I'm not looking forward to that. And I can't count the number of times that I heard people, like, advocating stealing stuff from Walmart. And the argument...
That's a bad idea.
Well, the argument was that Walmart is a giant, evil megacorporation, and all we're doing is we're slaying the dragon a little bit at a time by stealing stuff from Walmart, and that it's not hurting anybody. And that's true if you narrow your... If you narrow your vision just to Walmart, but the thing that you're stealing from Walmart, you're also not legitimately buying someplace else.
Right.
Even if you couldn't afford to buy as nice of a thing from, you know, the store down the street as you could buy, as you could pocket from Walmart, because there are ways. I think that that's an area of theft.
In no way do I condone stealing anything from Walmart.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that you should. I'm also not saying you should steal Paint, Photoshop, or any of the other programs. But I'm saying it's something, while we're on cost-benefit analysis, it's a cost of theft that most people don't actually think about. That my actions may or may not ever be known as far as... me stealing this, you know, downloading this program, but it's also costing the people that I actually could be supporting that are more in my range, that are more in my wheelhouse, that actually do need support.
Yeah. All the people who stole Photoshop helped to kill, and let's be clear, they're dying, you know, Paint Shop Pro. And that is part of it.
They still have millions of users. You really can't say they're dying.
Well, no, they're losing
all of their systems. There are, you know, PaintShop Pro is out there in the market. They basically have embedded themselves into various different distinctions in areas. But Photoshop has done the same thing with student discounts and the such like that. Which helps people get it for, I don't know, $65 or something like that in comparison to the $700 that normal people
off.
Yeah. It's just an incredible difference of price for students. I have no idea where I'm going with this, but stealing the software, nobody should really have to do, but when you're actually needing the product ahead of time to be able to accomplish some income for yourself, it sometimes becomes a greater necessity to take the chance.
But how many people are actually in that situation? I mean, how many people out there who have and I know, I understand that this may make me an unpopular person when I say this, but how many people listening to this podcast right now have a Photoshop on their computer that they did not pay for, that they really actually need it?
Right, that they couldn't be using GIMP or Aviary or something else.
And how many people out there understand a tenth of the things that Photoshop actually can do? I mean, the manual for this thing printed out is like a phone book.
I know.
And that's just the supplemental.
Yeah, that's just the stuff that they can't put in the help file. So, I mean...
I have $40,000 in tuition that says that I know how to run Photoshop.
And most of us don't. And yes. It is a very powerful tool. It's going out to shoot garter snakes with a bazooka more often than not. It's not necessary for most of the people who are using it.
Well, what are the alternatives?
Well, that's part of the problem, because people can just take Photoshop, so there haven't the market
it's
forces.
It's a multi-purpose tool to begin with. I mean, you can use it for photo editing. You can use it for webcomic scanning and art.
And I'm not dogging on Photoshop at all. The idea is if you're gonna take something, there are free alternatives right now, and there are cheaper alternatives that would actually suit people's needs. Just fine. They don't need to go out and steal this program. There's not
personally,
a need.
Personally, I like Manga Studio. Manga Studio is awesome, and it's not as expensive.
Yeah. I know a number of people that use Manga Studio. They've been very, very happy with it.
That's for Manga Studio. I mean, it has a purpose. It has a niche.
Right, but I'm just saying that by stealing Photoshop, we're breaking the normal market forces which dictate what sort of products do and don't come into existence, because Photoshop being $700 without student discounts, without stealing it off of the internet, should have had dozens of programs with almost the same functionality, plus all of the innovations that their creators would have come up with that is stuff that Photoshop has never seen, that the rest of the world's never... Like PaintShop Pro, the reason I used it for years was because it has the art media functions, like for the chalk brush and for the oil paint and stuff, that you can't get out of a Photoshop. You can only get that from, like, PaintShop Pro and ArtRage, as far as I've been able to tell. The actual emulation of actual physical media... Photoshop doesn't do that. And by being as open to theft as it is, and I'm sure...
So the basic idea is that theft kills the market drive for innovation.
And competition. Because there's never been a successor to challenge Photoshop as being the industry standard. There is no Macintosh nipping at the heels of Windows or Linux or whatever. There's like Coke and Pepsi combined into one thing and everything else is huddled behind RC Cola.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is most likely because of the theft.
I'd rather have Tab.
I love Tab.
Yeah, so did I.
Do they even make Tab still?
No.
Oh.
I don't know.
They do, but only in certain states. You can only get it in certain places.
Anyway, so that was an overlong discussion on that, and we're into serious overtime at this point, but...
You know, and I still don't know the point of that conversation.
Well, I think it's...
Don't steal Photoshop.
Kind of.
Well, okay, don't steal Photoshop because there's other avenues you can take with better programs that you could use.
Think
well,
about
not better programs, just
well,
cheaper
alternative
programs.
There are alternative programs, and by choosing those alternative programs, you are actually helping to stimulate competition and innovation.
Which will in turn eventually make Photoshop even better. Because right now, they have no reason to get any better than they are.
Well, besides the fact that they have a very huge staff of very talented programmers.
But they have no actual motivation.
There's no direct equal market competition. And that if the lack of theft with Photoshop might help provide that.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody who had stolen a copy of Photoshop paid for a copy of something else... Even if it was like a 29, I think ArtRage is 29 or something. If everyone who stole Photoshop paid for that, there'd be three or four bigger names on the field, and I don't know what they would be. It would depend upon what people wound up settling on using. But the only thing really that can stand a chance of fighting against Photoshop now is GIMP, and that's because GIMP is already free. You don't have to steal it. So yeah. It can compete against the worst of Photoshop, but still it still doesn't have anything driving it to compete with the best of Photoshop.
Right.
There's also whole countries out there that basically say we're going to use nothing but new public license software. So GIMP is like used in entire countries because of that.
Yeah, and the idea isn't, you know, of course there are other pressures, but here in America at least, you know, market competition is something that has always pushed innovation. If you have a direct and equal competitor, you will take risks and innovate and try to do the next big thing. You want to be the next big thing. So that, you know, you'll grab a larger market share. And the widespread theft of Photoshop has actually discouraged that competition. So I think that's sort of the point. If we weren't out stealing it, and instead we're looking at the programs that would meet our needs and supporting them, then we'd see more innovation, and we might end up with better products out of it. Cut it out.
Like Manga Studio really increased their product by, you know, its users purchasing it and using it.
Yeah, yes. It got better because it was affordable enough for people to buy, and right. enough people decided to buy it instead of
okay.
stealing right. Photoshop.
Yes.
Okay. Horse is dead.
Moving on.
Well, I think that was pretty much it. It was just that's another example of market forces. Yeah. Where it directly intersects in a tangible realm with webcomics, and right. it's something that people don't think about when they do, which is the whole point of this is the why are you doing the things that you're doing? You know, yeah. what is the long-term ramifications? But that actually touches back on some of the other stuff we were saying, like about navigation earlier, the without a competing like navigation design, it's not really driving innovation forward, because since, you know, no one has copyrighted the back, forward, next, last, and I hope to God nobody runs out today and copyrights it. I'm pretty sure.
I think they get to.
Yeah, I think it may have officially gone on for a bit, but the fact that nobody owns that means that nobody is forced to try anything else, which means we haven't really changed that since, like, 96. We settled on a thing which worked, and we haven't deviated from it because there's nothing forcing the market forward.
It's a basic evolutionary model. If there isn't pressure to change, there won't be change. And there's yeah. no pressure to change it. Yeah, exactly.
So whether it's with genres or the paint program that you're using, think about what you're doing. I guess is the ultimate goal of this, and consider the broader picture of how your actions are going to eventually affect you and your comic and the community as a whole.
Indeed. Good wrap up.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. I feel positive about this. So how much of this do you think Fess is going to cut out?
Everything.
All of it.
Yeah.
He's going to replace everything. It with an interview from the convention. And,
He's going to interject his own commentary on, you know, crossovers.
I could just picture Fest doing that. It's like, pause, argue for 5 minutes, play.
Everyone's got to get their drink in.
Yeah.
Oh, boobs. There we go.
Boobs.
Adam, we have to derail this to giant robots. Quick.
We already did. We talked for like Gayzilla and
Gayzilla and giant robots, yes.
We did that like at the start. Those were the first 15 minutes.
Well, oh, I can mention Melissa.
Oh, good. And we have Mike on the show, so.
Yes, and I'm on the show.
I think everybody should be drunk by now. I mean, that was like 5 shots in 3 minutes.
Ooh. EXIERN.
And I could spell Adrastus for everybody.
Oh, do that.
Adrastus. ADRASTUS. Everybody drink.
But you have to, I think, you might, if I'm going to be around often enough, you might want to add another role in there for me recruiting another person into the card game.
Nice, there we go. We could add, we'll add that as well. One
every,
more.
Almost absorbed, every time I'm on, I always find somebody else.
Absorbed someone else into the card game. Finish your drink. Yeah. All right, so yeah, it's Sunday afternoon. Everybody's plastered.
Yes.
Thank you. Except for me.
Now go forth and frolic.
All right, so this has been Webcomic Beacon episode 191. I am Adam Smithy of theappleofdiscord.com and my blog, which I'm working on trying to build up right now, which is webcomichell.com, because I had to use that neat address for something.
And this is Tanya Higgins of daisiesandshitproductions.com.
Ooh.
And this is Liz Daly of adrastus.comicdish.com.
And this is Mike of wagonwebcomicbattle.com.
I guess it's my turn, huh?
Yes, yes it is.
This is Phil from comicpress.net, frump.net, and comicusel.com.
Nice. A threefer.
That's right. Oh, and webcomicplanet.com. Let's see, I can keep going.
Well, I could do that too if I wanted to. I mean, I got Apple Valley Comic and like I've said many times. I'm a
frump.info.
Let's see, I got omnitheist.info and I think .net. Catgirlguide.com, notanotherbush.com.
Wait a second, is it not another bush?
Yeah, after
is that a porn site?
Huh? No, it was after George Bush got out of office when there was rumors that Jeb was going to run. I registered notanotherbush.com so I could be on the front wave of the protests if Jeb actually did run.
It was it was political porn.
Yeah, pretty much.
See, that's why I just did Daisy's Chip Production.
Plus, I've said on here before, I'm mean. If like somebody on a forum pisses me off, I will go and see if they've registered the .com for their comic, and if they haven't, I will register it.
Yeah.
So that way, when they go to like, oh, you know, maybe I should grab, you know, something, something .com, they're like, what do you mean it's already registered? And it's pointing to Goatsy. Oh, no!
I can't have adrastus.com because it's currently being used by a forum for a bunch of people that play the Aeon MMO.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, so hence AdrastusComic.com, which is where we'll be moving.
But that's a fair thing, the sticking comic on the end of it. And it's not like they're wasting it like I am. I'm just wasting him because I'm mean.
Yeah, and AdrastusComic is already my Twitter, so I was like, all right, we'll go with it.
But, see, Tanya, marketing, viral connections.
I'm getting it. Yeah, I got it.
Anyway, if you're still listening, go home.
Yeah, we're done.
I am home. I'm going out.
Well, I need a sign off. I've been doing. Let's see, what was it that I was doing? All right, which button stops this?
Ends. I know, it's like a Minnesota goodbye.
All right. Anyway, I'm stopping this now.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.